Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Wednesday, the 17th of February. A very good morning to you and welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, campaigning comes to a close in the Ugandan elections. We've been talking to voters.
So you've just accepted that, what, Museveni will win?
Well, we shall see. Maybe this time there'll be a change, but I highly doubt it.
So you think it's 5 more years of the same?
Probably.
And internal migration in Africa. What is it like moving from one African state to another?
Kenya is a beautiful place, but I am who I am, and I'm not Kenyan. I want to be a Nigerian in Kenya.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Tomorrow, Thursday, Ugandans will be voting in parliamentary and presidential elections. As campaigning came to a close on Tuesday, key opposition presidential candidate Kizza Besigye said he was still confident of ousting veteran President Yoweri Museveni. Other opposition candidates include Emem Mbabazi, a former prime minister and ruling party stalwart, now running as an independent. But Museveni and his ruling National Resistance Movement, the NRM, is widely expected to win this election. Alex Jitter reports.
The ruling National Resistance Movement Party hired Uganda's top musicians to entertain crowds throughout their campaigns. Before Yoweri Museveni turned up to address his last campaign rally, it was pomp and dancing as the crowd enjoyed the music. In his last campaign message to party supporters, President Museveni assured his supporters that nothing will interrupt the peace that he and his party ushered in 30 years ago.
I want to repeat this. No one should scare you. Whoever attempts to cause violence, you will see what we shall do to them. If they want violence, they should go somewhere else, not here in Uganda.
Throughout the country, Museveni has been echoing the message of development and prosperity for all.
The NRM message, unity, which creates strength, creates peace, and peace brings development, and development brings wealth, and wealth creates jobs. But jobs cannot be taken advantage of if you don't have skills. So we are going to increase technical schools for skills.
Museveni's biggest opponent in this race, Kizza Besigye of the Forum for Democratic Change, drove through the city outskirts, making various stops to address his supporters. Unlike on Monday, his team this time round worked with the police and agreed on the route to follow in order to avoid facing off with the armed forces. During all his stopovers, he urged his supporters to turn up in large numbers on voting day and safeguard the vote thereafter. Before the rallies, Besigye addressed the media and said the Electoral Commission chairperson, Badru Kigundu, was biased.
Professor Kigundu and the Electoral Commission spokespersons repeatedly make utterances that denigrate opposition candidates and show a partiality towards the incumbent. Last night, Professor Kigundu said in an on-record television interview that if he had his own way, I would not have been nominated. This is outrageous and is not becoming of the chairman of the institution that is entrusted with the management of an election for and on behalf of the people of Uganda.
Emem Mbabazi, Museveni's former prime minister, held 3 campaign rallies, with the final one at Makerere University. He promised that he was going to be president for only 5 years and hand over power to the youth. A group of local observers have reported that they have documented evidence of police brutality and bribery of voters by candidates. Livingstone Sewanyana of the Citizens Electoral Observers Network says the evidence shall be availed to courts of law in case election petitions come up.
Definitely, whoever acts outside the law will be held accountable. As observers, we have documented incidents of abuse, and we shall not hesitate to make use of this information should disputes arise.
Meanwhile, international observers that include former Tanzanian President Hassan Mwinyi and former Nigeria leader Olusegun Obasanjo have arrived in the country to monitor the elections.
Alex Jitta, and we heard Alex referring there to a local group of observers who say they have evidence of police brutality and bribery of voters by candidates. How much attention have these issues been attracting during the campaign? I put that question to another of our correspondents in Kampala, Ole Tanjan.
I don't think they've been attracting much attention. People have been focusing on the candidates, on the issues. Most of the candidates were traversing Kampala, holding campaign rallies. The key opposition candidate, Dr. Kizza Besigye, basically traveled around the outskirts of Kampala, holding numerous rallies, and they were held very peacefully. The sitting president, Yoweri Museveni, had a big rally in the center of Kampala at Kololo Airstrip to tens of thousands of cheering supporters. And Amama Mbabazi, the former prime minister, who is now an independent candidate running for president, was also able to hold numerous rallies. People are not basically thinking of these things. They're mostly just thinking about their candidates and about who they're going to vote for in the elections in 2 days' time.
Museveni is widely predicted to win on Thursday. You've been talking to people in Kampala. Do they think the outcome of this election is a foregone conclusion?
Well, unfortunately, I spoke to one voter today, or one young. I would say he's in his mid to late 20s. Young man carrying a laptop case. And he basically said to me, no, I'm not going to vote. The vote is a foregone conclusion. I voted in 2011. Why do I need to go and stand in line for many hours in the sun in order to vote when the outcome of the election is already determined? A lot of this comes back to the Electoral Commission, which is run by Dr. Badu Chigundu. And he has come under a lot of criticism in the last few weeks for offering different and varying accounts of what type of ID people are supposed to bring in order to be eligible to vote. And also the latest is that they are saying that no one is supposed to bring either cell phones or cameras to the polling stations. Many people are accusing the Electoral Commission of trying to confuse people as to what to bring, how to show up, what to have with them in order to have an effect on the outcome of the vote.
What's the mood like now in Kampala now that campaigning is over? Is it more tense or less tense than it was before?
It's very less tense than it was last evening when I spoke to you. We had a very peaceful day. Like I said, the candidates were able to campaign to their supporters, and everyone was in a good mood. Everyone was upbeat. Everyone is looking forward to the vote.
So are people less worried about violence than they were?
I think so. I think if it would have ended up differently, people would have been very nervous. People will return to their jobs and go about their daily lives, and then they get a day off from work on Thursday in order to vote.
What do you think turnout's going to be like, or is it simply too early to say?
It is too early to say. Turnout is a very questionable thing in Uganda because you have these confusions in terms of which ID you're supposed to bring, where you're supposed to vote. Many people don't have IDs. Many people don't have the proper identification that is needed to vote. So turnout is very much a question. And even all the experts I have spoken to over the last few days, no one can really predict what the outcome is going to be, whether or not Museveni will take 50% plus one vote, which is enough to take the presidency, or whether or not he will fall short and that will lead to a runoff election.
Ole Tanjan in Kampala.
News, analysis and feature reports, all that here on Africa Link.
A one-day general strike in the Democratic Republic of Congo, called to put pressure on President Joseph Kabila to leave office when his mandate expires in December, has caused disruption in the capital, Kinshasa. Traffic was greatly reduced and the central market was empty. Kabila is barred from seeking a third term under the constitution, but the opposition, which organised the general strike, fear he will either delay a poll slated for November or change the law so he can run again. I asked our correspondent in Kinshasa, Patrice Chatera, to tell us who has been participating in the mass stoppage.
The general strike attacked every most of sectors of the public life, because moving around Kinshasa this Tuesday, schools, even government offices in Kinshasa city center were left closed because most of civil servants did not turn up. And as you said, market and other businesses across a residential area or business centers could not operate. Apart from the civil servant who were afraid or who were threatened by the government, if they don't turn up to their workplace, they will be punished.
Do you think this one-day strike is going to be the start of a bigger protest movement?
I think so, because there is a coalition of opposition parties and civil society organizations that have been set a few weeks ago. They issued timetable of activities they will be carrying out to put pressure on President Kabila or to dissuade him from clinching on power. And I read a communique from that coalition called a Dynamique de l'Opposition or Opposition Dynamic. They say this is just the start of a series of activities they'll be carrying out until President Kabila steps down end of this year.
So do you think this strike will have an impact on President Kabila's future?
Yeah, I think speaking only about this strike is only part of the overall political struggle that has been going on in the country for almost 2 years now. And President Kabila has been losing many constituencies from his political support, with the defection of several political leaders. And the success of this strike show that the loss of President Kabila, the constituency he has been having or backing him, means it weakens him more and more.
Now, to the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo lies Burundi, which has been in chaos since April of last year because President Pierre Nkurunziza insisted on running for a third term. There has been much bloodshed, hundreds have been killed, and close to 250,000 people have been displaced. How worried are people in the DRC that something similar could happen in their country?
In DRC, when you see how the political mood is in the western part of DRC, political tension, where ordinary citizens are all shouting loud that President Kabila should be aware. And there is a slogan that has just come up, according Lingala, the widely spoken language in western Congo, called Yebela, meaning Kabila, you must know. And people only focus on campaigning against that Kabila attempt to try to cling on power. And people are saying they won't really let any attempt by President Kabila to stay on power, which means that the only option President Kabila still has at the moment is either try to use force, like it was the case in Burundi, or to hand power so that peace can prevail.
Patrice Chetera in Kinshasa.
Behind the headlines.
In eastern Ghana, in the Volta region, a group of activists are campaigning for independence. They want the territory on which they live, formerly known in colonial times as British Togoland, to be split off from the rest of modern-day Ghana. The group, which has the innocuously sounding name of Homeland Study Group, have dug deep into their country's history to produce arguments which they say back up their claim for an independent Western Togoland. As Isaac Ledshi reports in this week's Behind the Headlines, the group is tapping into a vein of dissatisfaction over the lack of development in eastern Ghana.
Ghana's Volta region, previously known as the British Togoland, is a historical landscape. In 1922, British Togoland, now Ghana, was formally placed under British rule, while French Togoland, now Togo, was placed under French rule. There has been no major dispute to this arrangement until now, when a group called Homeland Study Group Foundation called for split.
We are talking about the age-old Western Togoland, which stretches from the coast right down to Boku and even a little way behind it.
That's the convener of the Homeland Study Group, Charles Kwame Kujoji. He argues that the entire process towards merging the British Togoland in 1956 was flawed and illegal. Hence, it's now time for Volta region to stand on its own.
A good child born by parents should decide to be on his own, see to his children, do everything, so that he doesn't permanently become a burden to his parents. That's a good child, but the lazy one decides to be there forever and ever. We are grown and can do our own thing, and so we want to be on our own. Ghana cannot be our father, our mother, no.
Kwame adds that the former British Togoland lacks development and needed facelift, but a lawmaker from the Volta region, Kofi Humado, is kicking against the demands of Kwame. Humado, who is a member of the ruling government, is calling for dialogue to address the concerns of the group, which is mainly about political alienation.
I am not in favor of secession because I don't think that is the solution. The issue is just to revisit the former plebiscite and the UN resolutions, and then to kind of formalize the situation. When I talk to people, they feel that they are alienated. It's not a legitimate reason. That's why I'm saying that we just have to revisit the issue of the union.
On the streets of the regional capital town hall, residents are divided on the matter, although majority of them feel the region has been neglected by the government in areas of development.
It will be bad to have Western Togoland becoming a country on its own. At least we will be independent, we can run our own things, and I think we'll become a better place.
This idea has lingered on for a long while, and it has not gotten anywhere. The reason is the people who should foster this cause are not interested in it.
The call by the group is, it's a misplaced priority and premature, and I won't support that idea. It will not augur well.
With elections approaching, government is likely to be forced to enter into negotiation with these agitating people of the Volta region on their demands. The matter is dominating media discussions, and government officials from the region are hoping to quench the dispute before it escalates.
Isaac Kelechi reporting. Finding your feet in a new country can be difficult. Afumata is a businesswoman originally from Nigeria who moved to Sierra Leone and then Uganda. She now lives in Kenya. DW's Uta Steinwehr wanted to know what life was like for a Nigerian living in Kenya.
Afumata has just turned 35. Even though she's celebrated the evening before, she's keeping all her appointments. Her smartphone vibrates constantly. The Nigerian businesswoman has lived in Kenya for 5 years. Her main reason for coming was that her husband was offered a new position. He works with a major African telecommunications company. But Afumata didn't just follow her husband out of obligation. It was a mutual decision. In recent years, the Nigerian business community in Kenya has been growing. But Nigerians are still frequently confronted with stereotypes, Afumata says. Sometimes they are considered to be shady, bad guys, or fraudsters. People are cautious when dealing with them. But Afumata doesn't allow this to get her down.
I don't want to put my head down as a Nigerian because I believe that there's a negative perception about Nigerian, because a lot of Kenyans may not have come in contact with a Nigerian. They may have just heard what people are saying. So I feel like I am an ambassador of Nigeria for people to actually know that beyond the perception, Nigeria is made up of people just like Kenya or any other place.
Roger Samisi, himself a Kenyan, works for Keninvest, a government authority that promotes investments in Kenya. He thinks Nigeria's reputation is getting better. A few weeks earlier, he travelled to the town of Kitui, east of Nairobi, and talked to the people.
They don't look at Nigerians as people who are doing wrong things. They look at Nigerians as people who are coming to invest in their country. So the more you get the big guys coming in, the perception will change.
According to Amisi, former restrictions were part of the problem. Restrictions on Nigerians traveling to and working in Kenya. He believes the more restrictions there are, the more people enter the country illegally and give more substance to the stereotypes. A year ago, Afumata and her husband opened a business in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. Together with two Ghanaians, they started a West African restaurant called Mama Ashanti. Afumata sees this as a perfect place for integration. The team present West African food and culture to Kenyans, but slightly adapted to better suit the Kenyan market. The best example is Nyama Choma, grilled meat, a famous national Kenyan dish. First, they had to learn that Nyama Choma is not just meat. Kenyan guests complained about the way it was prepared and served at Mama Ashanti.
Believe it or not, it was an issue. Because, too, you may think, what is it? Just chop it up and sell. But we chopped it up and we're selling, and Kenyans were saying, it's not right. So we had to get a Kenyan Nyama Choma expert to work in the kitchen.
Now they present it Kenyan style, but spice it the West African way. Most people hear that Afumata is not Kenyan when she starts speaking English. Her accent reveals her origins. That's something she's proud of.
I would not change my accent because I want to camouflage who I am. I would only take from Kenya because Kenya is a beautiful place, but I am who I am and I'm not Kenyan. I want to be a Nigerian in Kenya. We have different cultures and I think that's a good thing. Not because a Nigerian is any better than a Kenyan, but because that's just the world we live in.
Funnily enough, people in Nigeria would say she now has a Kenyan accent. At some point, the Matas plan to go back to Nigeria, but they take something of Kenya with them. And for now, it's their home.
Ute Steinwehr reporting.
Opinion.
And in Opinion this week, we'd like to hear your thoughts on Africa and its leaders. In Uganda, President Yoweri Museveni has been in power for 30 years and is now aiming for a fifth term. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, there was a general strike on Tuesday by concerned citizens worried that their president, Joseph Kabila, might not vacate his post when his mandate expires in December. Do you think a limit on the number of terms a president can serve would help to promote Africa's development? We've also been hearing about migration within Africa. Is this an underreported topic in your country? Let us know your thoughts in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, in an SMS to country code 49160957595110, or in a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And we'll be reading your comments on the air in your say here on Africa Link on Friday. A reminder of our main stories. In Uganda, candidates in Thursday's presidential elections have been holding their final rallies. In Kinshasa, capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, shops were closed and many buses were running empty after a general strike was called by the opposition to warn President Joseph Kabila against trying to cling to power. And we've also been hearing what life is like as a Nigerian living in Kenya. Some other news. The former UN Secretary General Boutros Boutros-Ghali has died at the age of 93. He was criticised for the UN's failure to act during the 1994 Rwandan genocide and for not pushing hard enough for UN intervention to end Angola's civil war in the 1990s. More on the life and times of former UN Secretary General Boutros Boutros-Ghali on our website dw.com. There we end this edition of Africa Link. As always, thank you for listening. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow. From me, Mark Caldwell. Bye now.